Welcome to The Sound of Economics, a podcast series by Bruegel, a Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and this is part of a special feature of The Sound of Economics, reporting highlights from Bruegel annual meetings, which happened between the 1st and the 3rd of September 2020. Usually physically gathering hundreds of people in Brussels every year, the annual meetings are the flagship event of Bruegel. This year, due to the pandemic, we held event entirely online. And for this episode of The Sound of Economics, we report the full speech of the Minister of Finance of Germany, Olaf Scholz, touching upon the key issues of Europe is facing for its economic recovery and its own sovereignty in a complex global setting. After the speech, you will be able to follow as well a lively conversation between the minister, Guntram Wolf, director of Bruegel, and Maria De Mertzis, deputy director of Bruegel. Enjoy the listening.
I'm very happy to have the opportunity to take part in this year's Bruegel's annual meeting, and I'm grateful to the organizers for making it happen. All of us connecting digitally is perhaps a perfect example of our current new normal and of how the pandemic is changing the world. Politics, too, is a very different animal these days. We have to take enormously consequential decisions, often within a relatively short period of time and with a limited amount of information. Therefore, the open exchange between decision makers and experts can be vitally important if it contributes to well-informed policy making in our response to this crisis. And so I'm looking forward to our discussion. But before we get into it, and in order to get us started, I briefly want to make 3 points. My first point, Europe has shown a strong response to this crisis. Perhaps it didn't look like it at first. COVID-19 hit Europe relatively early on in the global pandemic, and in many European countries, it hit hard. Parts of Europe are among the worst affected regions in the world. We have seen nationalistic reflexes despite the cross-border nature of the pandemic. Some commentators have asked whether open, liberal, and democratic societies are actually capable of dealing with this kind of crisis. Europe has shown that, yes, we are capable. In fact, the characteristics that define our European model of democracy are also our best assets in the fight against the pandemic and its economic fallout. With a strong role for a responsible government, with the guarantee of social security, and with an emphasis on solidarity, we can weather this storm. Solidarity is the cornerstone of the EU. One of its founding fathers, Robert Schuman, called it a de facto solidarity that is created through concrete acts. Acts that, like flying in and treating patients from neighboring countries, or like helping out with much needed medical equipment. In this crisis, Europe is living up to its core principle of solidarity. And we are putting our money where our mouth is. It was only in April that the Eurogroup agreed on a 540 billion euro safety net to protect workers, businesses, and states. Now we are working out the details of our 750 billion euro recovery program to get Europe's economy going again. And that brings me to my second point. For recovery to be truly successful, we must recover together and use this opportunity to transform our economy. Together for Europe's recovery, not for nothing have we chosen this as our motto for Germany's council presidency. Recovery will only work if we do it together. We must make sure that all parts of the EU can overcome this crisis, especially those that are hardest hit. Ultimately, this is a question of the cohesion of the single market and therefore of a major source of our prosperity. Together describes the how of our recovery. The what of our recovery is investment. To get Europe's economy back on track, investment is key. Coupled with smart, credible reform packages, it can create growth opportunities and make our economies more resilient. But to have a lasting positive effect, it must also be the right kind of investment. I am talking about ecological and digital transformation, about making sure that Europe and its economy are fit for the 20s of this century. That is why I have pushed for an ambitious, cohesive, and transformative recovery program. We have spelled out such a program in the joint Franco-German proposal. And now, with Next Generation EU and its Recovery and Resilience Facility, we have a program on the table that has been agreed by all member states. Next, we must continue a path and finish the legislative process so that funds can become available at the start of 21. Driving our recovery program forward will be a priority during Germany's Council presidency, and it is connected to another priority, finalizing the next MFF, the Multiannual Financial Framework. The outcome of this process in the second half of 2020 will determine how the EU will emerge from this crisis. Which brings me to the third and final point. With its strong crisis response, Europe has taken a big step forward. Now we have an opportunity to take the next steps that are necessary for a better and more perfect union. Put together, the safety net and the recovery program elevate Europe's common financial policy to a completely new level, a level that moves us closer to a fiscal union. The EU will issue a substantial amount of debt together. The simple fact that the EU will also repay this debt together calls for, among other things, more EU-own resources. We will discuss this topic at the informal ECOFIN in Berlin next week. Achieving a fiscal union will complete the economic and monetary union. This way, we can increase the stability of financial markets. We can strengthen the role of the euro, putting it on a similar level to the US dollar in a way that reflects our economic weight as the world's largest trading bloc. We can ensure our financial independence and thereby our sovereignty. In the puzzle of building a better European Union, we need other pieces too. Moving ahead on minimum corporate taxation to ensure that everyone contributes their fair share. More decisions taken with qualified majority, especially in tax matters or in foreign policy, so that Europe cannot be divided easily. And further integration of financial markets by deepening the banking union and the capital markets union. We will work towards progress in all these areas during Germany's Council presidency. The pandemic has shown how much we, as individuals, all depend on each other. The same goes for Europe. No European country can go it alone. Strengthening the EU is a question of sovereignty, of holding our own with the United States or with China, who are forcefully asserting their national interests. Only together can we defend our European way of life. For me, a strong and united Europe is Germany's primary national interest. Progress to this end will require perseverance and leadership. We will have lots to do in the coming months and years. It is entirely up to us Europeans if we want to emerge from this crisis with a better, more social and more sovereign European Union. Let us face the coming technological transformations and societal changes of the 2020s together. Bruegel can play an important role in understanding these challenges. And with this call to action, I will conclude because I'm eager to hear your questions and your input. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, for this this speech, this very clear set out. And I noted in particular this very strong sentence, a strong and united Europe is in Germany's interest. I think a sentence that certainly I, as a German in Brussels, subscribe to. And I think that probably many in Germany also subscribe to. But there's certainly a big debate on this. Let me push you before I give the floor to Maria on one point, which is really related to the term sovereign. You mentioned fiscal union. You mentioned we are moving closer to a fiscal union, and you are a lawyer, of course. And when I talk with lawyers in our home country, Germany, I often get the response that sovereignty is really something that only belongs to a nation state. You have talked also of the Hamiltonian moment. Are we really talking here about a step change in European integration where, you know, we move from a group of states that are bound by a common treaty, but still a group of states, towards something where there is at least a nucleus of really sovereignty, decision-making power with QMV? You mentioned foreign policy, you mentioned tax policy at the European level. Would that be also your agenda if you were elected the German Chancellor?
Thank you for your question, and let me draw a picture. The world of 2050 will be a world of possibly 10 billion people. This is quite a lot, and the European Union will be 400 or 500 million as part of this world. There will be a lot of very influential states. It will be Russia and the US still, but it will be also China. But it will not be just the three. There will be India. There will be many other Asian nations. There might be one from or two from Latin America and also Africa. And if we see this, the only way of keeping our sovereignty will be that we do it together as 27 democratic states in Europe forming the European Union. And this is, I think, the necessary understanding we have with all the things we are going to do. And looking at that, it's absolutely clear that a lot of decisions that are of importance for us and our citizens can only be done together. This is in the case with foreign policy. This is a question of our common border. This is a question which links to migration. This is a question which is important if we think about technological sovereignty and the way how Europe is doing its economic way. And this is also a question that relates to social cohesion and a question that is important for banking and fiscal union, for instance. So it is necessary that we get this progress in this very understandable fields of politics. Many of the claims on Europe were always saying it's they were discussing about questions of common regulations. Many people are speaking about very not important questions. But the real things people bother is about foreign policy, is about borders, is about migration, is about economic success, is about all the questions I already mentioned. And so we must deliver there. And this is the way of creating sovereignty I think we are doing now. And with the decisions we are taking this year, I think, and big progress is necessary to do, and it is absolutely unavoidable if we look at the questions of the debt. Who is taking a big debt like this has a common responsibility in paying for it, and this needs more progress, for instance, in the question of own resources.
Thank you. So creating European sovereignty, I think it's a very important phrase. Maria, would you like to perhaps ask one or two questions?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Minister. Thank you so much for joining us, for accepting to be at Bruegel today. And thank you for giving us so many issues to think about in such little time. In everything you said, there is an underlying message, and that is one of unity, one of a common approach. But if I may, Europe is not just the one thing. Europe is many things, and it is different economic industries, different economic models, different capacities. If you think of just of the fiscal capacity and how it showed itself, it played itself during the pandemic, different legal systems, different foreign policies, different global outreach, different economic interests, if I may say so. You're on the driving seat as now being the president of the European Union, but also as a big country who is expected to give us leadership on this issue. How, may I ask, are you intending to unite us behind all the challenges that you raised?
First, I think that looking at the global development I already spoke about, it is absolutely unavoidable that we make the necessary progress. Second, there is a good chance for us, because if we look at the European economy, it's much more a European economy and not a really national one if we look at all the different countries. If you just look at the many big companies that are working all over Europe, you will understand that it would be a big mistake to look at this integrated economy with a view that might have been right in the 60s or 70s or 80s or even in the 2000s. There has been a big change and we are much more integrated. So it is absolutely necessary that we work together. Even if we look at our response to the crisis, we will find that saving a company mostly done by one country is also helping a lot of employees. In many other countries, there are a lot of plans, and we are not just looking at the one, the country where the company's head office is located. And because of that, I think it is a wrong view to think that we will have a chance not to cooperate. We have to do it. It's absolutely in anyone's interest. Yes, there are a lot of discussions. There are a lot of views on these questions, and as we all remember, there was a broad debate before the Council deciding on the program with the MFF and the recovery program. But in the end, it was a consensus, and different to the situation 5 years ago or so, it was just a very small debate. And if we look at this time from the perspective of someone who is a historian and writing the book about this year, he will not have words for the struggle. He will just say this was the year when Europe decided to respond to a big crisis together, and this is the change.
Let me, Mr. Scholz, push you and move away a bit from the big picture questions, a bit more exactly. On some of the concrete issues that are now on your table, being in the chair of the president of the Council and also having to negotiate the package that the European Council has agreed, but that is still in the trialogue with the European Parliament, of course, the Commission and the Council. And really one of the big debates around this Recovery and Resolution Fund, Next Generation EU fund, is its governance and how will payouts be supervised? How will we make sure that when there is a payout, that is actually the money is going to be well spent, and you know in what direction the funds will also be used, and who's going to supervise it? And the European Parliament, top leaders from the European Parliament have come out very clearly and loudly saying, "Well, we want to have a say. We want a red card mechanism, something where in the end we can stop payouts." When they are not in line with strategic priorities. Can you give us a sense where we are in these negotiations in the trialogue, and you know whether Germany in the end would support some significant role for the European Parliament in this?
So first, I think there has been a very clear message coming from the decision of the Council. This is that we will do something which mostly should help in the beginning and in the first years. So it is designed for 2021 and 2 and possibly 3. It's not just more money for the MFF. And I think it's absolutely key that we understand that anyone now has to look for programs and activities that could be done to fight against the crisis at this time. And then we will have a way of accepting the programs, which is designed in the decision of the Council and clearly representing the states of the European Union. I will discuss from this proposal, and we are just at the starting point discussing with the Parliament. I think it will be a very difficult debate, yes, because we have not a lot of time, but my earnest willing is that we should have a conclusion and a solution this year so that the money can flow from the beginning of next year.
May I go back to the recovery fund? I think that's a very interesting instrument that has been introduced, and it, in many senses of the word, it is a remarkable instrument, which is moving Europe much more forward, as you said also in your speech. You mentioned also the issue of fiscal union, and actually I see that many of our audience are actually wanting to dwell a bit on the issue of the fiscal union in many forms. Can you give us your vision of what you believe the end game is in terms of a European fiscal union?
It's quite difficult with the idea of the end game, because in a real political process we are moving forward and then we will see how the end will be. But the next step in this case is really that we understand that we need own resources. Yeah. And yes, there had been a very long debate on own resources, and we already have some, but not too many. But now there is a big change, and this, I think, is important for the game you mentioned. The big change is that now, after we will take this debt, it is necessary that we will have the decision on the own resources. There is no room for maneuver in postponing a decision. Because if we don't find a solution how to finance the payback, this would mean that this will be on the cost of the multi-annual financial framework. And this is something no one could agree with. And I really see no one that would. So it is now the best moment for a reform, which will then develop something which is a more successful fiscal union, because then we have common own we have own resources which will be able to manage the activities of the European Union. And I think this is the decisive moment, and doing it will change many things. My wish is that this is done with the perspective of thinking about something that is related to Europe. So if a own resources is only drawn by the idea we need money, it's not enough. One must be able to understand why this is something that has to do with the European level or with the European Union as the whole body. So my view is it's right that we now discuss on possibly emission trade in the question of seafaring and air business, that we discuss on the question of digital taxation, that we discuss about the question of a financial transaction tax, because these are things where anyone can understand what this will have to do with Europe. And if we think in this way, I think this could be also important. My view is also that we are trying to learn that the easiest way to get the necessary progress is that we use the already existing chances unanimously, deciding that on several topics there will be a majority, a qualified majority decision possible. This would be really a breakthrough.
Thank you. I want to come back to your previous response on how to use the recovery fund, and you mentioned very much that you want speedy disbursements, so fast disbursements, so that a lot of money can flow 21, 22 already, helping us to recover and sort of as an anti-cyclical Keynesian counter-cyclical fiscal policy. Now, the problem is a lot of EU funding takes a long time until it's disbursed. And I'm wondering whether we put perhaps a bit too much emphasis on speedy payout instead of quality and good payout that helps us recover from this recession with a better growth path, and also, as you mentioned, an ecological and a digital transformation. I mean, shouldn't we take a bit of time to design the whole mechanism in a way that the payouts, when they occur, really occur and transform? And as you say, I think you mentioned the word benefit the EU as a whole, so create some European public goods. I mean, really boost a new way of having a European economic growth model, instead of trying to sort of very speedily go for quick payouts in 21, where you know, the good use of those payouts may be more difficult to ensure.
I disagree. Just to tell you a short story, when I was Minister of Labour in 2008 and 2009 in Germany, during that financial crisis we had after the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, we took a lot of decisions to help the economy. When some years later I became the mayor of Hamburg in 2011, I was in a situation where I was supporting the start of some anti-crisis programs that are starting in Hamburg in 2011 and 12. So this is nothing that has to do with fighting against a crisis. So the reason why we are doing this, the reason why we got an unanimous agreement between the heads of states, the leaders, on the necessary decision, is that we are fighting against the crisis and we should stick to that. It is not another reason for doing something you already wanted to do. It is something which must have to do with the crisis, so it must be very early that we use the money. And it is not financing budgets, it's financing programs and activities that will support recovery. And let me add that there had been a debate about the increase in public debt for many countries, which would be a problem if we help them to get out through this crisis without that much increase. It is also correct that we stick to the reason for all these activities, and that is crisis.
Let me ask one more question on taxation, because you mentioned the own resources part, and I think a lot of people in Brussels will certainly entirely agree with you that proper own resources would be wonderful to have, and I think the ETS might be the way to go, so the emission trading system. But then you mentioned very much also the question of QMV in tax matters, so qualified majority voting in tax matters, and whether we cannot make some progress in that direction to be able to, I think at the end of the day, raise taxes where currently there's tax competition between EU countries, and there's an unwillingness to agree on at least a certain minimum of taxation. And I think if you look at the tax incidence, for example, of big companies, big multinational companies, you will see a lot of tax revenues, corporate tax revenues, going to 2-3 small countries in the EU, while the revenues are not generated in those countries. So can you give us a bit of a sense, what's your strategic agenda here and how you want to bring this forward? Because it seems to me this issue of taxation and tax competition is really one of the key issues when it comes to well, inequality comes to, you know, a lot of feeling also where people say, well, perhaps Europe, the EU is after all, it's not for the small people, it's just for the big companies. And I think fighting that kind of perception is very important. So this agenda, it seems to be, is a very, very important agenda, but many people have tried it before. And so I'm wondering, where do you want to head with this agenda?
So first, I think we should be absolutely clear, a fiscal union without avoiding tax arbitrage will not work. So minimum taxation is a key aspect of this progress. We will not have the one without the other. This is unthinkable. And second, we are now on a path where progress is really very near. As you know, there is an international debate within the OECD on minimum taxation, which is nearly to come to a conclusion in this autumn. And we think that we will get a blueprint, which is very concrete for a possible decision this year, as I already said. And we have a good chance because in this field, we are together with the United States, who have a sort of minimum taxation, which they decided on unilaterally. It's called GILTI. And my view is that getting an agreement on the international level is a very good progress, and it will then mean that the same will be relevant for the European Union. This is also the same with the question of the changing the taxing of international cooperation in the field of the digital platforms and the digital companies. This is a bit more difficult, but I think there is also a good chance that we reach an agreement for a blueprint this autumn, this year, and this is what we are working on very hard.
I see there's a lot of appetite to talk about the fiscal architecture of Europe in the future now and in the future. With your permission, can we move on to also other issues on the financial architecture, or is it?
Let's just, if you might, don't mind,
sure,
because there's one question from the audience, yeah, by Todd Bühl, who's exactly asking on a point that you just raised, which is the digital tax. And he's wondering, will EU countries be able to agree on a digital tax if there isn't an OECD agreement?
I'm quite confident that we will have an OECD agreement, because it would be a very dangerous moment for the international economy if we won't get an agreement in this field. So if you look at the fact that some countries within and outside of the EU already decided to collect digital taxes, like the UK, for instance, or within Europe, France and Spain and Italy, for instance, and some others, or outside of Europe, also Turkey or India, and the clear view of the United States that this is, to their point of view, mostly about Californian companies, we will have a very big conflict, which is not the right idea for a world that is still suffering with the coronavirus and a lot of tax trade conflicts, which are for instance, the one between the United States and China. My view is that this is all enough pressure for a compromise, and this is what I'm reaching for.
There is one more question that I would like to take from the audience exactly on these issues. It's coming from Adrian Schout, who's asking, if the recovery fund does not run through the ESM, are the concerns over weakened supervision by the Commission justified? And then perhaps we can move to other issues.
I think there is a proposal which is done now with the Commission's and the heads of state's proposal of the Council. We are discussing about the question, but obviously we will have to look that the money is used for what it is foreseen.
If I may I ask, I would like to move on a little bit on the financial architecture, because this is an important part of your portfolio and is one that perhaps may become problematic in the future. The crisis so far has been an economic one, a very deep economic one, but it has not affected the financial sector, the financial part of the economy. This may change. I mean, the uncertainties are what they are, but once the, if I may be allowed to call it, the fiscal drip stops, we might actually find problems in the corporate side. We might find problems in the banks. I mean, do you think this is a realistic scenario? Do you think there is that we are better prepared now? I mean, I'm sure we are better prepared now than we ever were, certainly by comparison to 10 years ago. But, you know, what are we doing to make sure that the economic crisis, the depth of the economic crisis we have seen through the pandemic, does not translate and compound into a financial crisis?
My view is that we are better prepared than we were 10 years ago. And it was absolutely right that after the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, we decided to change a lot of regulation on banks and on the financial sector. If we look 1, 2, 3 years back from now, we will see that there is a lot of people pressuring for lowering this this regulation and changing it because they said it's a good development. Why should we have this regulation? Now we learn we don't know when the next crisis will come, but we know that sometimes there will be a crisis and we should be prepared. And so I hope that we learn from the coronavirus, which is something which is coming out of the area of economy to the economy as a problem which is hurting us very much. I think it is necessary that that we continue to work on safe banks with enough capital and so on. And but as we have done our task quite well, there's a lot of things still to do, but we did a good job in the last years. I think we are relatively good prepared, and the banks are also. And as we are struggling for making it feasible that the real economy out of the financial sector is going on a path of recovery, we'll have a chance that both things together will produce a good outcome. So all what we are working on is that possibly in the beginning of 2021, we are at the level which was before the crisis, the corona crisis. And if we reach there, I think we could be quite optimistic.
Let me continue a bit on the architecture question and the architecture of the fiscal union, because we get a lot of questions on that point, and I think you strike a nerve here, because a lot of people are thinking about this, and it really is evolving this year. And as you say, I think history books, we will look back at this year, 2020, as a year where pretty significant decisions were taken to support the cohesion of the Eurozone, the cohesion of the European Union. And I think I also very much took note of your statement, and I think you're completely spot on there, that, you know, a fiscal union with tax arbitrage is really, I mean, very, very difficult to conceive, and I think it's going to be impossible. So we have a question here from Vesa Vihriele, who is in Finland, and an academic from Finland. He asks, what other institutional changes do you see necessary for the fiscal union to function well? And then more specifically, should the so-called no bailout clause be part of the rule book of the fiscal union or not?
We will always be in a situation where there is a big responsibility of any nation to do its own job. So we cannot develop a union which will be without their national responsibilities. So there must be something that has to be decided in the countries, but the decision-making process has both sides, the advantages and the responsibilities and the risks which are belonging to that. And my view of a European Union is not that there will be all the people speaking the same language. This is, as anyone knows, absolutely impossible and will not happen. We will not have a situation where this system of social welfare will be the same in all the countries. We need cohesion so that they work together, but we don't need that they all are the same. We need some minimum regulation, which, for instance, is important for questions like minimum wages, that anyone should have something like this, for instance. But there will be different systems in any country. And this is the reason why I think we have to define where we want to take common responsibility. But when we have common responsibility, that has the effect that the way of how we do it cannot be then decided by any member state different. Then we have to do regulations which are making things, which are organizing things together. But to be very clear, I think that the bailout clause is makes sense and it should not be changed. The no bailout clause.
Yeah. Very clear. If I may, I will also come back to the finance. I think there is also a number of questions there that are important. You mentioned in your speech the need to talk about the banking union, progress with the banking union. But I wanted to ask a question of the capital markets union. This was a necessary thing. We wanted to advance the creation of capital markets in Europe as a way of absorbing shocks. And actually the absence of a capital market in this current shock is very much felt in the way that is affecting our industrial policy. So would you agree that it's time that we made some progress with advancing with the capital markets union? And in your view, what would it take for the creation of capital markets in Europe, given that our efforts in the past 10 years haven't really advanced as much as they ought to have?
So we made a lot of progress in the last years. I think in the last 2 years, we took a lot of decisions, much more than 10 years before, and all the 10 years before, which helped a lot to form the capital market union. But there are still a lot of things to be done. And one of the tasks of my presidency is to make it feasible that we make some progress during this year or prepare the necessary progress for the time afterwards. What we need is a willingness for reforms, because it always takes that much time. We are having different systems, but we need the capital market for have better growth and better development. You cannot discuss about interest and not forming a capital market union. The capital market union will produce the chance for better investments all over Europe, so that the money is not always looking for the same rare number of places where it could be put. And so it is nothing which is just regulation or something good to have. It is something that really would have an impact on growth and of the chances we all together have. So I'm working very hard for this. And there are a lot of different dossiers we are working on. You never know what is the one that will be the next to be successful. But I think we should make this feasible. This is the same with the banking union, where we need more progress as in the last years. And this is why I made a proposal last year, which was widely discussed, how this could be done. My picture in this field is not to stick to one question or the other, but to change the whole scenario and to have a view on the, as you've set in another circumstance, end game in this field, and then understanding what should be the different aspects for making the reform. And just to mention the last thing, we are ready on in another field, in the reform of ESM, for instance. Anything is agreed, more or less, but there is the last step not done. So we cannot it is not a good idea of having an agreement 2 years ago, nearly in December, 2 years ago, more or less, than an agreement last year in summer, and we are still not ready to fix it. We should fix it.
So, of course, we are making a big step on capital markets and banking union with the creation of a European debt. I mean, that's in itself, the creation of a European safe asset is going to help us with capital market integration and banking integration. But I cannot resist pushing you on one point in capital markets union a bit further, which is related to enforcement of regulatory standards, enforcement of accounting standards, enforcement of good governance relative to capital market players. I mean, there has been some reforms in the past But I would argue in the EU there are significant gaps. We have gaps as regards anti-money laundering issues that my colleague Nicolas Véran has very much emphasized that. We have gaps in other areas where it's really about enforcement and the institutional setup of enforcement so that frauds such as Wirecard fraud cannot reoccur. Do you think we should review the EU architecture of capital market supervisory enforcement, or should there be only national reform of those supervisory architecture?
I think both is necessary. I'm absolutely open to reforms on the on the European level, because we need something which is making producing also a level playing field, and it is absolutely key for the European market, for the fiscal market, for all the things we are doing, that we know that this is something that is done by very high standards of supervision. And the same thing is on the national level. So my willingness is not to say, let's not do the reform on the national level because we are debating on the European level, and others saying, let's not do it on the European level because we first think things have to be done on the national level. Let's do both.
Yeah, I mean, there is just a quick question on this because I wanted to also touch on global issues. But there is a question by Anonymous asking on NIDAS, which is the third pillar of banking union. Has the position of Germany changed in the wake of the pandemic when it comes to the third pillar, the NIDAS?
As I already said, discussing about the banking union, I made a very broad proposal last year. And this is, in the end, the idea of not sticking to the one question. Because if we would like to form a banking union, this is not about EDIS. EDIS is one of 10 aspects which are important. And my view is that we will not get a progress if the one is sticking to the one point or the other is sticking to the other point. We need a whole scenario about a successful banking union, and then we can implement all the necessary steps that are relevant for this. And I think one of the mistakes of the debate in the last years is that the one part in the debate is saying we need EDIS, the other say we will never do anything if there is EDIS, and then nothing happens. So we need a scenario of a banking union that works. And this is that we remember what it is for. It is for that money is going where it's needed, and that this can be done under safe regulations, and that we have a real European market and not one that is fractured as it is today. But and so there are different areas where we have to understand what we can do. For instance, if we look at the ESM, there is a clear regulation. There is a supervision on the European level. And the question with EDIS is that there is no European supervision, but possibly a national one. But then you cannot just take a European responsibility without a common way of supervision of any small bank. This is something which one should understand. So we need to understand that we need a reform that is a complete scenario. And as you know, I made very concrete proposals on the question how European deposit insurance could be designed, which is different to the ones which are on the table from others and which is, I think, more pragmatic. But it's also part of a view which is implementing other questions, and we should not forget them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. I think we could go on, but I'm afraid our foreseen time is coming to an end already. And I think we have really also asked most of the questions, not all of them, but most of the questions from the audience. I mean, there are still questions that go well beyond, let's say, your portfolio as a finance minister, which concern foreign policy, which concern Europe's role in the world, perhaps also Europe's relation to China, where there's a lot of debate on those. So I mean, if you still have a minute, of course, we would love to hear from you still on, you know, what's your take on you know, Europe's strategy vis-a-vis China, which I think is the other big defining issue of our times. But of course, only if that time is still available on your end.
So I just will give a very short answer to that question, which is possibly more a starting point for a longer debate. Sure. But my view is that in the minds of many people, there is a mistake when they look at the world of the future. The mistake is that they are always thinking in the path of post-war world. And there was this bipolar world between the United States and the USSR. And now they think the only way the world could be changed is that there is a new bipolar world with the United States and China. This will not work, even because a lot of big Asian nations would not agree. There will be Korea, there will be Japan, there will be Vietnam, there will be Indonesia, there will be Malaysia, there will be, for instance, India, but there will be others as well. And there will be still Russia. Nigeria, to speak about one country from Africa, will have very early 500 million people more than the European Union. So the idea of some political strategists in the United States or China, if they have them, that this will be the important conflict of the future is wrong. The world will be influenced by many different influential countries and groups, and one of those who have the chance to run their own fate should be Europe. And this is why we are discussing about a more sovereign European Union, which is able to do the things that are necessary in that world. So my view on China is first start to stop the mistake that we are now discussing about a bipolar world, which is the United States and China. This will not happen.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think this was absolutely fascinating tour de force. We discussed so many different issues and you gave us really very comprehensive answers. So thank you so much for your willingness to be with us today. And thank you for your answers. And good luck with finishing the German presidency. You have a number of very, very important files on your table. And I think all of Europe looks at the leadership, especially, of course, on the fiscal recovery package.
This was the conversation between the German Federal Minister of Finance, Olaf Scholz, Guntram Wolf, and Maria De Mertzis during the Bruegel Annual Meetings 2020. You will be able to follow the other sessions of the event on the website www.bam.bruegel.org. For more insights and research from our scholars, you can visit the General Bruegel website on www.bruegel.org. Until next time, bye-bye.